We're following a developing story in Polk County now. Sheriff Grady Judd has just released the details of an undercover investigation targeting online child predators.
Good afternoon, Dia. We're talking about 41 men and women arrested in this undercover sting that actually ended on Father's Day. They got a range of people here, including a youth football coach, a Disney costume designer, even a community leader.
We do know how they'll end, folks. And there's never been more of a time in my lifetime anyway for parents to be concerned about protecting your kids. And let me just be clear. We talk about this a lot on the channel. Your security, protecting your kids, is your responsibility. It's not the school. It's not anyone else. It's you, parents. You must know the things that we need to do, because guess what? It's getting crazier by the day. I know I say this, but you know, the internet's a wonderful tool. It's also an evil tool used by evil people sometimes. But that's just not the limit of the concerns we have. Well, I have great news. I promised you when we launched this podcast that I'm going to bring real security issues to the table. And this is maybe near the top, with real security experts to talk about real security solutions. And today I have the distinct honor of having my friend for many years, Jim Holler. Jim is a nationally recognized expert on identifying and preventing crimes against children. And Jim's a retired police chief. By the way, Jim, thank you for serving us so well. And I am excited, because I think parents, we all want to be ahead of this curve. We don't want to be waiting for something to happen to our kids and then trying to make sense of the mess. So, Jim, welcome. It's an honor to have you. Tell everybody just a little bit about yourself.
It's great to be here and have this opportunity, without a doubt. So I spent 16 years in the police department as chief. And we were involved with the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. We did multiple undercover investigations when it came to child pornography and online chats. I've been consulting now for about 25 years. And it's just a great opportunity. I wish we didn't have to talk about that, this, Tim. I wish this was a non-issue and child sexual abuse didn't occur, and, you know, we could just talk about other really cool things. But unfortunately, I mean, you do a Google search. I did today. You know, I don't like to watch the national news, but, you know, I'll look at headlines. Do a Google search of how many preachers or priests have been arrested for molesting kids just in the last year, and thousands and thousands of names will come up and photographs of them. And it breaks my heart, because it's scary, because we think, okay, that's a lot of people. But the thing is my gosh, that's only a small percentage of who's really out there and what's really happening to our kids. And that's why, like you said, we need to do a better job and making sure that the parents and caregivers understand the dangers that these kids face. You know, a lot of times, I mean, everyone needs to be on our radar. And I say that a zillion times, and everybody's like, you know, I've got my radar spinning. You know, I walk in a group of people and I might see a guy that looks a little scary, but it's not really spinning all the time if it's not spinning at home, or if it's not spinning at church, or if it's not spinning at, you know, our sports events and so on. It needs to be spinning all the time. I mean,
Jim, that's such a great point. If I can stop you here for a second. That is such a great point. We've got to be aware, because if you look at what we let in with, 41 people, you know, what shocks me, and having been a police officer and an agent most of my life, are the number of police officers.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Yes.
In the middle of it. So it's such a great point. We can't ever not be alert to people interacting with our children. So 41 in this case, Polk County, right here in Florida. The good news is, in Florida, they will be treated appropriately under the law. Not a lot of tolerance for those kinds of crimes. But
story was a great story to lead into, because one of the things that not only everybody needs to be on your radar, but as a caregiver and parent, you need to be a detective. I mean, you need to be monitoring what's going on in your child's life. And we've given them, you know, this, the most powerful tool in the world as far as a cell phone. And I've got a good kid. I mean, they've never been in any trouble before, blah, blah, blah. And I don't monitor anything. Why should I? Because nothing bad's ever going to happen to them. But if I'm a child sexual predator, I know that every night I can go into the bedroom with your kids and you're never going to monitor that. In fact, just 2 weeks ago, I believe it was Burlington, New Jersey, a youth pastor of a church. He ends up creating this persona of a 12-year-old girl. You know, and we can go online, we can find pictures of any kid. And so he, you know, makes this profile. He goes out, starts befriending other guy boys, 13, 14-year-old boys in the community and also his church, posing as this 12-year-old girl. And, you know, it's all about this grooming. Okay. So you, all of a sudden these kids are like, okay, I've met this really cool girl, you know, and you know, she's asking me for a picture. And then all of a sudden they're starting to send pictures. And then, hey, can I get a more explicit photograph? Is it a naked photograph? Those pictures are exchanged to the point where some of the boys are starting to realize the fact that, hey, this is not a girl that I'm talking with. And the guy comes out and goes like, no, but if you come forward and say anything, or if you don't meet me for a sexual act, then those photographs are going to be disseminated to everybody in your school and your friends list. And that's why as a caregiver parent, go ahead.
I'm sorry. The extortion thing to me is horrifying. Because frontal cortex of young adolescents, children, they can't process. So this is a horrifying potential to include, you know, from what I understand, you know, kids actually leaving home, going to hotels, doing whatever they're told to do, and the extortion begins. But let me ask you this, Jim. How do you balance with parents pure paranoia and fear against wisdom and, okay, I'm not going to suspect that everybody's trying to molest my kid. How do you balance that?
And that's a hard balance. But when it comes to, especially the cell phones, I mean, my daughter, I mean, they were my three grandkids were growing up, the cell phones were always on the dining room table at night, or that's where they were plugged in and charged. They weren't allowed to take their phones into their bedroom. And that was, and every now and then they would get online, they would just start looking. I mean, you've got to start that at a young age. It's going to be hard, you know, all of a sudden you've got a 16-year-old like, I want to monitor your phone. However, you know, it's just one of those things that if I can prevent something from happening, I mean, a great example, I had a social worker that was in one of my classes from Minnesota one time, and we were talking about this becoming a parents need to become a detective. And she goes home and she decides she's got a 10-year-old daughter, and she picks up the phone, starts looking at the phone, and there's messages from what appears to be an adult male about meeting. It was obvious that he had been grooming this 10-year-old and meeting and buying her things and so on. And while she's got the phone in her hand, a text comes in and says, remember, I'm going to call you at 11 o'clock. And so, of course, mom is like, okay, 11 o'clock, you're going to be talking to me. And, of course, she's calling me all freaked out. But I was able to, you know, get her located with the services that she needed there. But if she wouldn't have picked the phone up, it's a 10-year-old girl, right? And if she wouldn't have picked the phone up, who knows what would have happened. So,
Jim, let me ask you this. With that in mind, I know I only did a brief stint in a child sex crime squad. It was not for me. I'll do warrants all day long, but that was just something. It was hard, you know. So, but I remember that sometimes in our cases, it was actually family members that were perpetrators. So what do you say to parents who go, well, how do you guard it? I guess the answer is you're just vigilant all the time.
Well, you got to be vigilant. And getting back to what we call red flags, and you know this, Tim, like, you know, it could be a shooting, it could be a suicide or sexual abuse. Once we're done with our investigations and we start talking to every family member or every friend, there were red flags that were missed by people, that they just thought that, okay, there's nothing really to this. Or, you know, every time I come in the living room, you know, the baby's on grandpa's lap and, you know, he just loves his granddaughter, right? But no one is like following through as far as making sure I keep watching and keep looking, you know, to make sure nothing is happening. But the red flags are there in a lot of these instances that we end up seeing that people just totally miss. And we had a bathroom incident where a priest was in a bathroom. Well, a member of the church walks into the bathroom. The stall opens up. The priest comes out. There's a young 7-year-old boy inside the stall. But the member of the church thought, of course, the priest's reasoning was the child needed help unzipping his pants. And so that was one of those red flags that were missed, because I totally trust this person and he's the priest, he's the preacher, and, you know, nothing, there's just no way that that could ever happen, right? And those are those, like I said, those red flags a lot of times that we end up missing. But if our radar's spinning, and like you said, with family members, that's tough. I mean, you get all your family coming over and no one's thinking about like really watching the dynamics and watching my kids. But unfortunately, we need to. I mean, the stats are, you know, one in four girls are sexually assaulted before they reach the age of 18, 1 in 6 boys. So take that average of 1 in 10 kids. That's a lot.
That is a ton. Jim, let me ask you too. What's the latest correlation? I know there's a lot of research in this area. What's the latest correlation between child pornography and people actually acting out with children? Is there a correlation there?
Oh, yes. Okay. I mean, I wish I had the numbers here, but yeah, it's big. And usually, like when we do these investigations, when we're looking at those child abuse images, that child pornography, I mean, a lot of times we're going to end up seeing the victims that that person's been with. And as far as victims. And so, I mean, it could be my very first time ever looking at it to progressing to the fact where now I've got to act out and, you know, find these victims. And it's just kind of a scary piece when you start thinking about. And a great example was, where was this guy from? I just saw this today. St. Louis, Missouri, a 72-year-old preacher. He had more than 4,000 child abuse images, child pornography on multiple computers in the church. Not only did he just have them in files, that he went into PowerPoint, he made PowerPoint slides of all these kids. They were all under the age of, they're thinking 7 to 8. And he visited them multiple times. And how he was caught is that he failed to take one of his photographs off the copying machine in his office, and his secretary in church came in and ends up finding that photograph. I mean, wow. Again, everybody needs to be on our radar. We just never, ever know.
Yeah. What's sad to me is obviously this podcast is for everybody, but that we're seeing such a high number of the clergy and church. But, you know, it's not just them,
as you pointed out earlier.
It's police officers. It's judges. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's like it's horrifying to me. And I really appreciate the fact that you're saying, hey, there is no time when we shouldn't be thinking about how to protect our kids. And, right. Jim, I know you train U.S. attorneys. You train state's attorneys in a variety of topics related to violence against children. What other threats are you seeing other than the online piece? What other things are you seeing that are concerning you or on the rise?
I mean, there's just so many when you start thinking about what our kids are facing, you know, and, it's just one of those scary pieces that, you know, as a parent and caregiver, we need to be aware of anybody that wants to spend more time with our kids than we do. Okay. You know, that what I call that off duty time, like where that red flag needs to come up and be aware of that. But, you know, we're so busy. I mean, everybody's so busy in what they do, with sports and with school activities that, you know, we've just given that opportunity, you know, for these individuals. And, you know, the scary piece is when you start looking at these child sexual predators, they're skilled in what they do. I mean, they are definitely skilled. I mean, some of them screw up and that's how they get caught. But one of the last investigations that the Attorney General's office did here in Pennsylvania and one of the dioceses is that the priests that they arrested, they are thinking that these guys had been molesting kids for 20 to 25 years before they were caught. And so, I mean, that's just one of those, everybody needs to be on a radar and got to be that detective without a doubt.
Let me ask you a follow-on question. Obviously, domestic violence as a whole, that's one of the things we kind of train identifying and assisting through HR, domestic violence. What kind of impact are you seeing with what's going on in the house affecting children, not just sexual, but abuse? I know you train folks in that area, too.
And that's, you know, in law enforcement, the majority of our calls are domestic violence calls.
Right.
And it was also sad because knowing what the kids were going through, what they experienced, seeing that violence, and especially, I mean, things have changed a lot where we're now focused a lot on this child victim as far as offering them services, making sure, of course, our adult victim is taken care of, but making sure there's services available for these kids. Because if there's not, and, you know, when I look at my career early on, I never thought about the kids and what they experienced. It was all, you know, my adult victim. And, you know, I want to save her, you know. But then when you start seeing these kids without any intervention and these kids growing up and now becoming, because violence is a normal part of their lives, and now all of a sudden they're the domestic violence abuser against their girlfriend, against their wife. And that's just trying to break that cycle a little bit. And we're doing a better job as far as law enforcement, child protective services, prosecutors. We're doing a much better job than we ever have to be able to try to help these kids through those situations. But it's a big deal. I mean, the stats, one in three women are victims of domestic violence. Is someone you know, someone we know is a victim.
But, crazy. What are some warning signs that a child may be being physically abused?
Well, of course, you're going to have very easily physical injuries that you're seeing. And that's a tough thing for law enforcement investigators because we know that freak things and accidents happen to kids.
Right.
And, you know, poorly explained, you know, of how this injury occurred, you know, the caregiver story, we always dive into the caregiver story to try to, as an investigator, can I reconstruct this? Could this have been an accident? Could it have been something that was intentional that happened to these kids? But getting back to domestic violence and child abuse is we've got professional abusers, okay? Because I can hit you in your chest, your butt, your back, your head. You're not going to see any marks unless, you know, I'm forcing you to take your shirt off. And of course, in law enforcement, we need that probable cause to make the arrest. And I don't see any injuries. And she changes her story. And, you know, we've got professional abuse. So we have no ifs, ands, or buts about that.
So, you know, Jim, it's interesting. We do a fair number of on-site assessments for houses of worship, for synagogues, for corporations. But one of the things that I always recommend, always, is if you have kids in a place, you have video in that place. And if, in my experience, we've had a number of allegations, fortunately, that went the other way. Hey, my kid was not treated fairly. My kid was pushed or beaten by a worker. And then you have the video evidence to say, well, I don't see this. In the mix. So what are some other accountability measures that, you know, our economy's hard and moms and dads are out here trying to provide for their families and they're dropping their kids off at daycare. And we all see the videos when the daycare workers go south. But what are some other accountability measures that you can demand or ask, that your daycare provider, you know, be accountable in?
And making sure that the staff has adequate training, that they know how to recognize sexual abuse, physical abuse, good background checks. But both you and I know that, you know, anybody can get a background check and it comes back perfect because I've never been arrested. or have never been found out. And I think educating more people about, especially the sexual abuse piece and signs and symptoms, and making sure that they understand, you know, about their radar, like we've talked about and so on. I think that's real important, because we just need more people to be aware of what's going on. I want to piggyback about what you said about cameras, because Wichita Falls, Texas. Okay. 7-year-old girl goes into the restroom, use the restroom. And when she comes out, the preacher is standing there. He's got his pants down. He ends up pulling her out, pulling her pants down, ends up sexually assaulting her. So there was no mention about cameras. Like in our church, and we've got cameras everywhere except for the bathrooms, but definitely have that camera in that hallway of that bathroom. That, like, during church service, especially, adult male goes in, you know, kid goes in. Okay, what's the time frame they've been in? Who should walk in there, and so on? But then when you start thinking about this scenario, and I don't know all the facts of it, but this had to be a pre-planned event where this preacher knew that I can do this, get away with it. But even if you did have a camera, who's going to monitor that off service time? You know, who's going to go back every now and then, like, okay, let's look at some of these videos throughout the day, a normal day when we don't have a lot of people coming in and out of church. You know, who knows, right?
And, you know, Jim, that's a good point, because I've consulted with situations where the nursery has, or the daycare facility, or they have a two-person rule, but yet, because sometimes they're understaffed, they let children go to the bathroom alone.
Right.
And I think that's just a horrible, horrible idea, because you just don't know who could have come in,
right,
and who could be waiting or lurking in the bathroom. All right, brothers, we turn the corner. I'm going to pin you down.
All right.
What would three things be that you would want every parent to know in order to better protect their children?
Everyone needs to be on your radar, number one. Number two, you've got to be that detective. And I think number three is just paying attention to your surroundings. And that goes back to that radar piece, pretty much, of who's around my kids and who's spending time with my kids. And you're trying to better prepare myself as a parent or caregiver in how to prevent this from happening.
Those are three great things, Jim, and I appreciate you. And I think, you know, it's interesting to me, as in kind of everything facing our country. I think also, as old as children, I know my daughter told me, three kids. I have 8 grandkids, but my daughter, whose husband happens to be a police officer, she said, I have conversations, real conversations,
yes,
with my children. If anybody ever does this or this, and we're talking in the youngest case, it's a 3-year-old. So she is saying, hey, baby, nobody pulls your pants down. Nobody. And those kinds of conversations are pretty, I think, important, you know, in today's world as well, because our kids, despite our best efforts, they're going to have to face circumstances on their own. And like you, I'm hopeful and prayerful that this will come back around, but I fear that it will not.
Right.
And
right.
Crimes against children are going to continue. So with that said, brother, thank you.
You're the best I know
in this area. I'm going to pin you down, though, because I want to pull you back on.
Okay.
And talk about some other things. Jim, real quick, I know you're doing a lot to educate and train, and talk to us a little bit about your efforts.
Okay, we do training all throughout the United States on crimes against children, specific investigations with law enforcement, the whole multidisciplinary team, and also started a company several years ago called Firefly. We do independent sexual abuse investigations for large religious organizations, usually all cases that are beyond the statute of limitations for the states that still have them. And so just try to keep busy, trying to protect as many kids as we can. And
so how do they get you?
You can go on my website, the Holler Training, HOLLER training.com, or Firefly Independent Sexual Abuse Investigation.com. So
Jim, thank you for what you do. I know from personal experience how painful it is to digest what you have to see on a regular basis. And you're a stronger man than I. I'm grateful for men of courage and character like you that are willing to say, no, I'm going to stand in the gap. I'm going to protect our children, regardless of where the culture's going. So I'm grateful. Obviously, I'm here for you at any point, and I'm honored to call you my friend. Thank you again for your time today and for all your wisdom and insight. And oh, by the way, don't go far because we'll be connecting again soon.
All right. Sounds good, Tim. All right. Thanks a lot.
Stay safe, my friend.
All right. Bye.
Okay.